And suddenly a car comes wheeling out of the Loyola campus, one of the cross-campus drives, and just like comes out across both of our lanes.
I have been a public transit commuter for over half my life. I rode the buses to my barista jobs in Denver and the New York subway to my barista jobs in New York.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Henkin.
And I'm Aaron Henkin. Good to be with you again. We got some great stories this episode. What's our theme for this episode, Jessica?
The theme is Streets of Baltimore. This was an event that we did in partnership with Bike More, which is an organization that tries to get people to do exactly that in Baltimore City. And
this event was at the Checker Spot Brewing.
Yes, which is a great event, delicious beer.
Down there by the B&O Railroad Museum.
Mm-hmm. And by Camden Yards and Raven Stadium.
Yeah. Sport. It was a good show.
It was a good show, but there is some ambient noise in the background because breweries all, for the most part, are very tall buildings.
Perhaps not designed with acoustic storytelling in mind.
Nope.
But nonetheless, a fun place to hang out and be an audience for good stories, and I think we handled it pretty well.
Yeah.
Recordings are solid, and the stories are great. Yeah. Who's on our roster for
well,
this episode?
That's a good question. Our first storyteller is Len Van de Graaff, who is sharing a story about some Streets of Baltimore occurrences that happened to him after a night of playing soccer. Take a listen.
This story is a slightly different commuter story. It's a late night on the streets of Baltimore story. And when you're preparing to, I've done this a couple times, and when you're preparing these stories, you sort of think about them in a different way. You start to reflect on why you want to tell the story and what the story means. And one of the things I was thinking about, this took place in 2012, and we weren't really like obsessed with our phones yet. And it doesn't directly relate to the story, but this, I don't know, I was thinking about the fact that with our phones, we feel like we're closer to people. You know, it's this window into sort of intimate moments with other people, but yet we're really kind of distanced from them. So this story was a story about two strangers meeting on the streets of Baltimore driving, and having a very real and sort of intimate moment, and then never seeing each other again. So this is what happened. On Tuesday nights in around 2011, 2012, I used to play in an indoor soccer league in Brooklyn over the Hanover Street Bridge. And we were the adult league, so we were always late. So it was about 11:30 at night, I'm heading back home, and I'm on Charles, just about to cross Cold Spring with Loyola on the right and Notre Dame on the left. And not many cars going north, and suddenly a car comes wheeling out of the Loyola campus, one of the cross-campus drives, and just like comes out across both of our lanes and into the oncoming lanes, and then jerks back into our lanes. So I'm looking at it, and I sort of slow down, and I'm watching, and sure enough, he's just sort of like going from one lane to another, and I'm thinking, Jesus, you know, like a moment later, a car does come south, and I'm thinking, it's one of those moments where you're looking at something, and you're thinking to yourself, I should do something, you know, like this is going to be bad very quickly, but I didn't know what to do, you know, if I called 911, what's the chances they would actually find this guy? And so I found my mind sort of already in problem-solving mode, and then the light at Homeland and Charles turned red. So I'm behind him still, and I just pulled up next to him, and I looked across, and I was in my mid-40s, and he was in his probably early 30s, bespectacled, you know, a little collared shirt on. And I put down my window, and I yelled across to him. I said, you shouldn't be driving. And he took him a moment to figure out where the sound was coming from. And then he looked over, and I could see he was really out of it. And I said, at this point, I started making decisions about having more contact and having an impact on what was happening. So the first thing I did was I put your window down. So he put his window down and he's looking at me and I said, you should not be driving, really. Why don't you pull over? And he said, okay, all right. So at this point, the light turns and I said, no, no, seriously, pull over, turn. So I'm like indicating him to go over onto Homeland. So he turns onto Homeland and then he pulls into, I tell him to go pull into the parking lot that's right there. At this point, I'm thinking like, what the hell am I doing? What am I gonna do? But I follow him in, I park next to him, and I walk up to the car, and I said, get out, come on, let's talk. So he gets out, and he's just like standing there like this, you know? And I'm like, all right, this is what we're going to do. You're going to call someone, and I'm going to wait here with you until someone comes to get you, right? So he takes out his phone, looks at it, and he does one of these. Three numbers. And I'm like, I know you didn't dial anything. You know, like, come on. But he finally, like, we work it out. I mean, he's really almost nonverbal. And eventually tries to call his partner. And his partner doesn't answer. And I said, okay, is he going to be home soon? What's going on? He said, he's at work. So I'm thinking, like, maybe now I call the police. But part of me also was like, they're going to come, they're going to arrest this guy. I don't know. I was like, maybe there's a different way. So I said to him, all right, how far away do you live? And he says, not far. You know, so I said, all right, this is what we're going to do. You're going to give me your keys. I'm going to give them back to you, but you're going to get in my car. I'm going to drive you home. And then you come get your car in the morning. But at this point, I realized I was doing something that had the potential to go terribly wrong in so many ways. But he got in the car, you know, and we get in, and I'm thinking, all right, like maybe I'm driving him to Rogers Forge or Towson and be done with it, and I'll know he's safe, his car, he knows where his car is. So we get in the car. We start driving up Charles. Go past Rogers Forge. Now we're past GMC, and I realize we're heading towards 695. So one part of me is like, good job, Len. This could have been really, really bad because he would have been on the highway at 11:30 and just not even conscious. So we go, we get on 695, and he turns to me at this point, and I say, how far are we going? And he goes, I'll show you. And then he turns, and he says, are you going to arrest me? And I realize the whole time... Me in my soccer jersey, absolutely convinced I'm the police. So I'm like, I don't break it to him at this point because things are calm. He's behaving himself, and we're heading someplace I assume is his home. So we eventually get off at Reisterstown Road, go north on Reisterstown Road. Eventually, like 25 minutes later, we find a condo complex. Thankfully, he could remember his address. We get there, we pull up, and I knock on the door, and his partner is there in scrubs and has a very, like, amazed and extreme expression on his face, like, what the hell is going on? I explain the situation, and he's, like, both angry and alarmed by my, like, angry at his boyfriend and alarmed by me, and I just sort of, like, back away and go to my car and I'm like, okay, that went better than it could have. And he's safe and we're good and that's it. Like, that's kind of the end. Except we had the same phone. So I get home and I realize I have his cell phone and he's got my cell phone. So the coda to all of this was the next day I get a call from his boyfriend saying, hey, I think you exchanged phones. So the next day he comes and he drives and he comes and he meets me and I realize as I come onto the street, he does not recognize me at all. I mean, no memory of the whole night. But I was talking about this with my girlfriend. She was like, well, what's the takeaway? Honestly, I'm not sure. I mean, I did this thing. I'm not sure I would do it again because of all the ways it could go wrong, but I'm glad I did.
Len Van de Graaff sharing his story at Checker Spot Brewing at a Stoop show called Commuter Chaos. That story definitely qualifies as Commuter Chaos. And like Len says, not quite sure what the moral of that story is, but it definitely sort of kept you wondering what was going to happen next.
That was great. Yeah. All right.
Well, and everybody made it home safely in the end. I guess that's the important thing.
Yeah, because he looked like a police officer in his soccer jersey. Okay, so we're going to be back for another story after we take a quick break. All right, we have a second story from that show, Commuter Chaos, and this is a story from Emily Aaron about her experience mostly taking the bus. Take a listen.
I have been a public transit commuter for over half my life. I rode the buses to my barista jobs in Denver and the New York subway to my barista jobs in New York. I was even in a bus accident in Denver, but don't worry, nobody was injured. But the place it all started, like most of the things that matter in my life, was right here in Baltimore. I started riding the number 3 home from high school when I was a student at the Baltimore School for the Arts in the early aughts. My best friends Anna and Doreen and I would haul our book bags and our art supplies to the corner of Charles and Reed, stopping at Never on Sundays or the Mount Vernon Mini Mart for a snack. After college, I moved to Denver, where I took the 38 to my various barista jobs. One afternoon, a car hit a patch of ice and skidded into the back of the bus. Luckily, neither vehicle was going very fast and no one was injured, but I was very late to work that day. Denver is an excellent town and I really enjoyed my time there, but about a year after I moved, the East Coast called me home and I moved to New York. Now, New York and I have a very complicated relationship, and I never want to live there again. But if you love public transit, New York is your Christmas, New Year's, and 4th of July, all wrapped up into one beautiful, albeit smelly package. You can even take the subway to the beach. I took the subway, the number 1 line, from my rented room at 139th and Broadway to the Starbucks in the World Financial Center all the way down in Battery Park City. My commute was at least an hour, and it was the shortest of many of my colleagues. In May of 2009, Baltimore called me home. I wasn't quite ready, but she said, "Emily, it's time." After a nasty breakup, I moved in with my parents for the summer. I was 25. It was a most humbling moment. The goal was to save some money and return to New York, but I fell in love with Baltimore. I was smitten. She and I are kindred spirits to the end. We are quirky and resilient, smart and optimistic, genuine, and above all, worth the effort in getting to know. Since returning to Baltimore, I have used primarily the bus as my means of getting to and from work. I took the bus to my job at Macy's, the number 8. None of these bus lines exist anymore. I took the 11 to a now defunct restaurant in Harbor East, where I was also a barista. I rode early in the morning and late at night. I rode in the summer when there may or may not be air conditioning, and I waited at many a cold and dreary bus stop. I've ridden on full buses and empty buses and lots of buses that smelled like weed. One Thanksgiving afternoon when I was waiting for the bus home, I met a man that I would come to know as Ronald. He was homeless, and he had asked me for money. And as it was Thanksgiving, I gave him $20. He quickly learned my routine and would meet me at the bus stop many afternoons after work asking me for money. One of the things he told me was that he needed $4 to get into a homeless shelter. I, of course, assumed he was lying because what homeless shelter charges admission? Well, I later found out that Helping Up Mission does in fact charge admission to their walk-in shelter. I ran into Ronald years later on the number 3, and he thanked me for my kindness, told me he was sober and in recovery. Up until about a year ago, I'd been taking the buses very religiously. Well, it was really hot last summer, as many of you probably remember, and I was walking to work from the bus stop and was fearful that I would arrive looking like a drowned rat. And figuring this wasn't a good look, I started taking Ubers. And for the first time in my life, I could afford a form of transportation that was not public, and it was wonderful. I could sleep a half an hour later, I got home a half an hour earlier, I didn't have to walk, there was no inclement weather and no waiting at the bus stop. Uber transport does have its adventures, though. One man was giving me a ride home, and he was watching a football game on his phone while talking on his phone while actively driving the car. Another gentleman gave me the entire history of Southeast Baltimore in the 30 minutes it took to get from my house to the hospital where I work. In case you were wondering, the original Jimmy's Seafood was at the corner of Browning Highway and Hollabird Avenue, but was moved to make way to widen the road. Most days are thankfully uneventful, and I welcome the silence and the opportunity to zone out and collect my thoughts and go over my day. I now am a hospital social worker, and I spend most of my days having uncomfortable conversations with strangers, and so I welcome the opportunity to not do that on my way home. The public transit commute is a special beast. It's travel mugs and backpacks and portable fans for those non-air-conditioned buses and umbrellas just in case. It's not for the faint of heart or the ill-prepared. Part of my heart will always be on the MTA, but these days, I'm glad my butt isn't an Uber. Thank you.
Emily Aaron sharing her story at the Steep Show Commuter Chaos at Checker Spot Brewing, a longtime intrepid Baltimore bus rider. Like she said, there are things about public transportation that are maddening, but also things about public transportation that give you the kinds of moments and interactions that you otherwise might be missing out on, cocooned in your single operator vehicle. Although she didn't seem too regretful about being able to afford an Uber now and then.
Yeah. it's variety is the spice of life kind of thing. So it's nice that, to have variety in the modes of transport, like you and your e-bike. I mean, that's a...
Thank you for bringing that up on this podcast as well as at the live show.
I mean,
there's nothing cooler than a middle-aged dude riding around on an e-bike.
I think we are legitimately not even middle-aged anymore. I think we're just aged. Because I think middle age is like, I don't know, we should look that up.
What the parameters are?
Yeah.
Upper middle-aged?
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, you've done it. You've listened to another episode of the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I want to thank WYPR, Maureen Harvey, and all of you for taking another listen. And to learn more about future events and past episodes of the podcast, you can go to stoopstorytellingseries.com.